Hey, everybody, it's Kev O'Donohue. Thanks for waiting. Sorry about the mix-up. We are the Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests, trying to help you lead a more positively minded life. And we have a guest today, Dr. Will Winter, child psychiatrist, teacher or former instructor at Albert Einstein and NYU, and Beth Israel. He's a supervisor now of psychiatrists and psychologists, and we're having him on because we are concerned about motivation. What is your motivator in life? What gets you going? What stops you from going? It's really all about motivation. You know, when people are depressed, they're stuck. They don't know what their motivation for living is. When people are anxious, they can't really find what to be motivated for other than to get out of their anxiety. So we're trying to find out what is the ruling motivator in life, or one of them. There could be a few at different times. So we're here to talk today about fear. Now, as a child psychiatrist, you might imagine that Dr. Will Winter might have some experience with children that are afraid of things in the dark, or not, afraid of things in the light.
Right.
Dr. Will Winter, welcome to WBAI and the Positive Mind.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you.
So I am curious, and I'm sure the audience is also, what does a child psychiatrist deal with?
Well, a lot of things.
No.
You know, like, for example, for psychiatrists, working with kids, you get a lot of ADHD, behavior concerns, depression, anxiety. Fear is a big thing, though. Fear is huge. They may not come into the psychiatrist just to treat fear, but they'll come to the psychologist.
Right.
So they may not need medication for that, which is perfectly fine. They hopefully should not.
Right.
So.
Well, wonderful, wonderful. I'm curious about more of your practice, but really let's talk about fear in adults because most of our listeners are adults.
Sure.
And, you know, is it a motivator? Is fear a big motivator?
Okay, so before talking about fear,
yeah,
I want to talk about desire.
Oh, we love it.
Right.
Great.
So question is, you know, what motivates you or what motivates anybody? I'll ask you because you're right here.
Fear. No, desire, you know. But
desire.
But I lose contact and connection with my desires.
Yeah.
I forget them.
Right.
You know.
And so that's the issue. Like, for example, when you have people... they meet, and there's the instant attraction. Let's say it's a romantic type of meeting. So what's motivating? Desire. What brings them together? What decreases the space between the two? Desire. What makes space? Fear. Mm. You know, other negative feelings as well, anger. But really, they're all related to fear. If we wanted to talk about it and figure that out, we could.
Yeah.
And so basically, fear is actually stronger than desire. That's why I wanted to bring up desire. We all... are comfortable with desire. We all know when we pass a store and we see that chocolate ice cream that we want some, or an Apple phone or whatever it may be. And, you know, billions is basically spent on stoking those flames of desire.
Sure.
But fear is really what blocks us from getting what we want in our lives, in the universe, and also what we want for ourselves and how we could develop ourselves.
So we often forego our desires. I mean, I'm wondering if, like, desires are in the body. Like, if you see an attractive gentleman or attractive woman, you feel that physically, and you can talk yourself out of that desire.
Yeah.
Fear strikes me as something hard to talk yourself out of.
Yes.
So talk to us about how fear limits us. We, you know, talk about how it's a boundary of sorts.
Okay. So actually, it was some years ago. I was... actually listening to this show, Armand was talking, and he was talking about kids in a schoolyard. And so there was a study where the kids were basically, they were observed to be playing in the schoolyard, and a number of them were hanging on the fence. And then one day they removed the fence. And so what happened, they saw that the kids ended up glomming together in the middle of the field. And so... the irony was, when there was a boundary there, they weren't afraid, so they were pushing on the boundary. But when the boundary was removed, they basically glommed together for support because of discomfort / fear. Mm. When I use the word discomfort, it's basically low-level fear.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's an example of a boundary. That's a limitation. And so that, to me, I remember that show, and as you see, I mean, it is very powerful to realize that whoever we are today, whatever makes us who we are at this moment, and somebody could be a billionaire, they could be successful, whatever it is, they're a tiny, tiny fraction of what they could be. They're really a speck of dust currently compared to what they could be.
So as a child psychiatrist, you must see a lot of this fear in children. How do you walk them through that? How do you guide them through that? How do you help them with that?
So the first thing is you want to have them face the fear. You know, when you have fear, you're so afraid that you don't even want to look at the fear. You're afraid to look at it. You literally, you know, sort of put your hands over your eyes and you say, you can't see me. It's this, you know, denial defense mechanism.
But, so yeah. You reassure them that, first of all, you're in my office.
Yeah.
This is very safe.
Okay. I feel safe.
I'm going to help you. No, I'm saying as child, you're saying this to a child and saying there's no danger here right now today. Let's face this together. I'll be with you as you go through this.
Right. One of my favorite cases actually was there was a kid. He was there. He had whatever the issues were. But one of the tiny issues that he mentioned was a fear of bees. And so it turned out there were a lot of bees outside.
Bees.
Yeah. Bzz. And so what happened, I said, let's do it. And we went outside, and he was scared. And I said, okay. And I gave him, you know, the recipe. I said, now stand like a statue. And the bees will, you know, they'll fly around you, but they'll leave you alone. You won't get stung. And he did it, and he felt so positive. He felt so happy and empowered when he faced that fear. And what that does is it gives people the energy to then face their other fears. You know, when you face one, then it's a positive feedback loop.
It strikes me that fear can be a gift. You know, you can be afraid of something. It can take all of your energy. It can really make you turn into yourself. But if you can stand up and face it, there's a sort of liberation that happens.
Absolutely.
Once you realize that the fear is only fear. It's not real.
Yeah.
And so you get your energy back.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like this, you were there with him also allowing bees to be on you also. So I think that must have been a kind of support for him.
Sure. Sure. Look, in a way, I was able to do this because I had a fear when I was his age. And I faced it at that time, and it felt awesome. And I knew he would feel the same way, which he did. Yeah. And so
So do you have a definition of fear? Because it's so pervasive. It's so big. Is there any one way that you define it?
Okay, so fear is, because it's so powerfully motivating, you know, I wanted to, in a way, illustrate the difference between fear and desire, which I know we started talking about.
Yeah.
And so, for example, I remember from years ago, there was this cockroach, you don't mind.
No. We're in New York. I think everybody knows what a cockroach is.
So I was sitting, and I was in medical school. I was studying, and I happened to notice this cockroach between my feet, and it was sort of like approaching towards my right foot. But it was, you know, its antennas were sort of going around, and maybe it was looking for food or something of interest. Curiosity was motivating, whatever it may be, desire. But then, when it was still an inch away from my right foot, I suddenly, pounced down on the table.
No.
I pounced with my hand on the table now. It was on the floor. I pounced with my foot on the floor.
Sure.
And the cockroach went in the opposite direction so quickly.
Yeah.
Like, you blink and your eye can't follow that cockroach. It's so fast.
Right.
And so there I saw fear is so powerful, much stronger than anything else as a motivator.
Hmm.
So you could define fear as the most powerful motivator.
If you're just joining us here, you're listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue and our guest today, Dr. Will Winter. He's a child psychiatrist. He is taught at NYU, Albert Einstein Medical Center, among other places. And Dr. Winter is talking to us today about fear. Fear as a motivator, fear as a driver for our actions, our thoughts, our feelings. And It's important because I think it's like you said, Kevin, it's such a pervasive thing. It's something that we all have to deal with. And yet it's something that is not understood because it's something that is scary because we don't want to even look at it, like you said earlier.
Right. That's right.
And I think it's something also that everybody has every day. You know, it's like Armand used to say, the five emotions: mad, sad, glad, bad, and scared. Hmm. So, you know, we don't have 100% glad today. I'm maybe 50% glad today. I'm 10% scared today, 20% angry, you know. So I think it's on a spectrum. Do you find, like, fear is on a spectrum? Like, everybody has it. Are all of your clients dealing with some type of fear?
Okay, so that's a good question. You know, when it comes to feelings, you want to think about the intensity of the feelings.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some feelings, you know, time to time, it's sort of like you can only think of or feel one feeling at a time. It may not feel like that.
Right.
May not feel it, but if
one
you,
takes over.
One basically, if you think of it like this, and the question I guess I'm getting to is this idea of binary versus continuum. Mm-hmm. If you think of at any given moment, and I mean a moment less than a second, just like a tiny fraction of a second, you're experiencing a feeling. Now, let's say you have a sense about the future. And that, let's say you have a sense about a future for the next 100 seconds. And the sense is one that's positive, is you have a certainty that things are going to work out well.
Yeah.
And if you have 1 second out of that 100, you still have a 99, which is a great score on any test.
Sure.
That'll get you into Harvard.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know these days. But hopefully.
That and knowing somebody.
Fair enough. But a 99, what that's telling you is for 99 seconds, you're like, yes, this is working. This is going to be great. And for that 1 second, if it's a binary, which I believe it is, for that 1 second, it's the opposite. It's, oh my God, we're all on Titanic. We're all going down. Panic.
Yeah.
And so now that's, that, in a way, that's like this sense of like trusting in that things will be for the best or trusting that they're going to be for the worst. Mm-hmm. And so if you have this understanding, what you start realizing is that 1 second is doubt. Not, 1 second out of 99, mm-hmm. out of 100 is doubt. What if it's 2 seconds out of 100? Mm-hmm. What if it's 10 seconds? At what point, what's the tipping point where you start not having confidence in the future, not having confidence in yourself, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. somebody that you love? You know, there's this idea about love. Are you being loved back? Can you trust in that?
Right.
Anyway, so
I love the acronym FEAR as false evidence appearing real.
Right.
You know, so when you're caught up in that fear, it appears real. I mean, when the continuum goes over the tipping point, I mean, you're pretty much convinced that what I was afraid of is real, is going to happen, is the real thing. And the question is, how do we stop ourselves from going over the edge and believing something that's really not necessarily there?
Okay.
We talked about cognitive behavioral therapy a few weeks ago. And, you know, the word there in cognitive behavioral is evidence. What's the evidence that you're a bad father? What's the evidence that you're, you know, not successful in life? What's the evidence that you're a bad husband or a bad friend? You know, because people can get caught up in these spirals. Once it starts, the self-doubt or the self-criticism starts, it can spiral and go over that tipping point, and we have to bring them back. Do you use that with some of your clients?
Absolutely. For sure. For sure. You know, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to hear it because, you know, the same thing that gets the mind into trouble, we can use the mind to get ourselves out
mind
of trouble.
Mind is everything. It's so powerful.
You know.
What else is there?
Right. Well, I don't know. Desire is there. I kind of like that too. But, you know, sometimes the mind's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
And it can get us, take us down roads we don't deserve and really don't want. So
right. It's
hard to, when it's doing that, to say, oh, I have another part of my mind that I can use in this moment, this circumstance, to turn this all around. So,
that's right.
You know, do you turn kids who are like believing something as real and sort of show them the opposite?
For sure. You know, what you have to do is, number one, you have to identify the fears. Lots of times people, like Ben, you were saying, people are so scared of a fear that they don't even want to look at it. Mm. And by the way, fear is considered like a weakness. You know, if you were to go around and tell people, oh, these are all my fears, guess what? Probably somebody would capitalize on that and take advantage. You don't want somebody who you trust in, and you need to function. Like, let's say the boss.
Well, if your surgeon is afraid,
exactly,
you don't want your surgeon to be afraid.
For sure.
Going in.
So, for sure.
Plus, it's a way to lose friends. I mean, I think it's really important to talk about your fears, and unfortunately, people don't feel comfortable doing it. I think,
at the
wrong moment, if somebody catches you telling you about their fears, we'll say, well, join the club. I'm afraid too, but, I don't want to be made worse by you sharing it with me.
Right. So people, it's almost like they're so fragile that they're carrying around all these fears that maybe they're not aware of, but the second they see somebody or hear somebody talking about fears, they're like, I'm out of here.
Right.
They don't want to, see what they don't want to see in themselves.
Right. So our question out there for you and for callers is, are you afraid? How's your fear factor today? On a scale of 1 to 10, how often is your fear factor each day a 5 or a 7? Or how often each day do you get to a 5 or a 3? And what are you doing to control your fear? How do you keep yourself from going over, as Dr. Winter says, the tipping point of fear?
Right.
So many questions around fear. I mean, when you think about it, all of television is about fear.
Okay, yeah.
I mean,
I could see that.
They're selling you, all the commercials are selling you something you're not something else.
Right. They're stoking insecurity.
Well, that's also,
right.
Unfortunately,
they're capitalizing off of that.
Say more about that, Ben.
Whatever the product is, right? If it's a weight loss product or hair care.
You won't be lovable unless you get this.
Right,
plus this is good enough to be loved.
This is going to make you look just the right way. Or this will make you be attractive or look intelligent or look cool or be sexy. And the flip side, the implication is that without it, you're just not. You're not enough as you are. So I agree that, certainly marketing is almost entirely based on fear.
Yeah. Look at Hollywood movies. I mean, every movie has to have a conflict. And where there's conflict, there's fear.
Right.
I think that, all of the moguls in Hollywood get together and say, how can we scare people?
Well, I think people go to a movie, some movies, because they want to see somebody overcome their fear, face the fear and move past it. They're really eager to see that because in real life, they may not be able to. And so they'll pay $16-$20 to see the hero be a hero. And before, conquering your adversary physically, externally, you need to actually conquer your internal adversary. You have to first fight yourself, win, and then you could fight somebody outside of you. Because if you're telling yourself you can't do it, you can't do it. What if you can't do it? What if you can't do it? It's always the question, what if? What if? Fear, trust, these things are future-based words. If we had no future, we would have no need to even be afraid or to need trust.
Like, say that again.
Okay. That was a little unclear.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go too far into trust. We could talk about that another time. But if we just take a moment and we look at trust, and it's in one way as a defense to fear. It's really about the future. It's sort of like when you're walking.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing when you walk? That's controlled falling. You're pushing yourself off into the future. You're already falling. And then at the last moment, your other foot comes and saves you, only to push you off again into the future.
Okay.
And this is walking.
Yeah.
And it's unstable. It's an unstable type of balance
that
we do. So
there is no future. But it strikes me that fear is something that happens totally in the present. It can take over
the present. Right. It's about the present. We feel fear now, but it impacts on what we can do or how we perceive the future. Let's say I believe I'm going to fall. I'm never going to learn how to walk.
Yeah.
A one-year-old, when we learn how to walk, more or less, they may be a little bit afraid, but they're too excited and curious, and that overcomes the fear that pushes them into the next step.
Beautiful, beautiful. So again, we are going to take your calls. We want to hear about this fear factor. Isn't that a TV show, Fear Factor?
I think it sounds familiar.
Yeah, so your fear factor. What is your level of fear? What are the things that hold you back? Because we are going to talk a little bit about getting beyond fear in the second half. And we just want to get a sense of how people are struggling with this. What percentage of your emotional makeup, of your day, has fear in it? little beyond anxiety, a little right. up the ante with a little fear in your day.
Right. Like, for example, what if it's very, very little fear? That may just be, I don't know, I'm a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable is, we could say that's low-level fear. We could say that. It depends. But so that's just a thought on that.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, so maybe I'm just a little bit. What are the signs of fear? How do you know somebody's, I think petrified is a great word to describe fear, because you are petrified. You're like frozen.
Right. Right. So if you're talking about maximum fear, are you asking like what the face looks like?
Yeah,
that type of.
Yes. I'm trying to say, like, how do you know somebody's really absorbed and wrapped up in fear?
Oh, so it's not so clear.
It isn't, is it?
It's not so clear. You know, somebody who's completely scared may look like just like frozen on their face.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like frozen. And somebody who's bored could just look sort of like dull on their face, which we may not be able to see the difference between that frozen look and that sort of bored, uninterested look.
Yeah. It reminds me of like the newscaster who was having a panic attack on air. You know, you can get this on YouTube. You can see it because he's spoken about it openly.
Yeah.
Panic attack is a real fear.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's 100%.
Sure.
Those of you who have ever had them, you know that you're totally believe you're going to die. And this gentleman had it on the air, and nobody knew it.
Yeah.
It's quite an amazing thing. So, again, we want to get a sense of what your experience is with fear. And do you see it limiting you? Is it that sort of fence boundary that Dr. Winter called about? We're going to take your calls at 212-757-5555. 212-757-5555. And we're talking about fears. You have an expert here in the studio. And we're all experts. I mean, we all know.
I think we're
all experts.
100% right.
It's tough to be on the planet.
We've all been there, and we've all been there recently.
So, again, we're going to tell you, give you the number, and then we're going to take a musical break. The number is 212-757-5555.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. It's just no good anymore since you went away. Now I spend my time just making rhymes of yesterday. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. Divided
Amy Mann here on WBAI with a song about being alone. And I think that's one of our biggest fears collectively. Everyone's kind of scared of being alone, and it's terrifying, really. Yeah. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue. Our guest today is Dr. Will Winter. Will, thanks for being here. Kevin, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ben. It's really an enlivening discussion. We're sitting on the edge of our chairs because even just talking about fear, you know, it does key up the spine and the nervous system. Right. I mean, maybe because we just know it so well.
Yeah.
More on fear. We have a caller. We have Theo on the line. Theo, how are you today?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing? I hope you can hear me all right. I'm in my car, but
we can hear you.
Oh, that's great. So I just came back from Arizona. I was with a Yaqui Indian with my family, and we spent a week in the desert. And one of the things that he asked us to do is to look at our fears, write our fears down.
Wow.
And once we wrote our fears down, I had a couple of fears. The main one was losing myself to other people's energy and being pulled into their tornado and losing my sense of self. And that was a big one. And he asked us to go into the desert and pick up a rock and ask the Great Spirit to help us to relinquish some of that and replace it back into the desert. And it seemed like what it did, it created more space for some of the other fears that I've had to come forward and to be able to address them, because a lot of my fears were fears that I had from when I was a kid. I'm telling myself the same stories over and over again. Yeah. You know, from when my father taught me how to swim, he put me on his shoulders, take me into the water. I was afraid of deep waters. I could swim, but I've been telling myself that story forever. So it was a pretty good experience for all of us. It was great that all of us were able to do that and express our fears like in a family therapy setting for 1 week. It was great.
Wow, Theo, what a great experience for you. So you're not going to be afraid anymore. Is that it?
Oh, sure. I don't believe that to be true. I think I'll be able to address the fears because I was able to confront them and realize that they're bigger in my mind than they are in reality, you know?
So the exercise of writing them down was really helpful.
Yes, that was immense, because, you know, sometimes you're in your mind and they just get bigger in their mind. Once you write them down, they're out of the soma, they're out of the body and into another vehicle on a piece of paper, and then we burn them after a while. Everybody put them all together and burned them and gave them up, and we watched them go up in flames in a good way. And we put them back into the desert on these rocks, and we hoped the Great Spirit would come and wish them away. It was a pretty good experience.
Wow, Theo, one wonderful way to purge yourself of fears. What, did you find anybody that you had a lot in common with other people in fear?
Well, the four of us had different fears. They were somewhat different. One of the fears that someone had was they were afraid. Of course, they're younger than I am, so they're afraid that they weren't going to leave their mark in the world before they died.
Wow.
That was an interesting one.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a fear of, sorry to interrupt, like a fear of death in a way. It's a good defense to at least say, well, I did exist. I did leave something here.
Yeah.
It's important for people to leave things in their mind when they're younger. When you get older, it's already at a certain position, and it doesn't make that much difference, you know.
Leo, Theo, you strike me as you have a lot of energy this week. Is this the follow-up from last week? I mean, talking about fears can really drain a person's energy. Is it me, or are you especially alive this week?
I feel pretty alive today. I did some cleansing this morning, so that was a pretty good thing. And I've been meditating more, so I feel a little bit more energized specifically today.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
So, look, we thank you for being our first caller today about this huge topic, fear. It sounds like you've got it under control. And it's always great to hear from you, Theo.
Likewise. Enjoy the rest of your show.
All right. Thanks, Theo.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. So he went away, actually, on a retreat, and got a chance to share with other people, you know, a ceremony of handling and facing fears.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. We're talking about fears, facing your fears. Fear is a motivator. Fear is a driver of our behavior, actions, thoughts, feelings. Give us a call. 212-757-5555.
And fear is an opportunity. I mean, he went and had a formal, you know, exercise with people to deal with it. But it's even privately, it can be an opportunity. Do you talk yourself out of fear?
Okay, good question. I think people have to not talk themselves out of fear, like to trick themselves, yeah, but in an honest way, in a simple, clear way, like you say, show me the evidence. And inevitably, there is evidence to the contrary that one should not have to be afraid. So now I liked what happened where Theo went to do an activity with people together.
Yeah.
And so now they're not isolated. There's this idea that when you're scared, you're alone.
Yes.
Or you're afraid to be alone.
Right.
That you won't be good enough, that et cetera and so forth.
Sure.
To do it together is fantastic.
And I think it's great to do it in a group because you can see how each one spirals differently. I mean, if you have friends and you could have like a fear group and talk and just notice how each other gets caught up in their own separate spiral and, you know, what the pattern is for each individual, you can help each other. That's we right. do have another caller. We have Ronald on the phone. Ronald, how are you? Hello, Ronald. We're waiting on Ronald. Okay, he's gone. You know what I'm saying? I mean, people don't talk about their fears in general, but, you know, what Theo did struck me as an opportunity.
Yes, and also it's like a protected situation there. Everybody is going with the same intention. Nobody's going there to hurt one another. They're really going there to support each other. And when somebody accepts you, when you expose yourself in that way and you share in that way, that encourages a sense of connection and trust. Anyway, so that's, I think it's a fantastic thing.
Ronald is here on the phone. Ronald, how are you today? Hello, Ronald. We are waiting on Ronald. thanks for trying again, Ronald. Okay, so keep trying us. For some reason, we're not getting the transfer.
That's okay.
I'm afraid the system isn't working.
I'm afraid of everything. No,
but anyway, he's called us twice, so we'll hope you keep calling us back.
Right, so there are some very good defenses to fear. For example, you know, it will be as it will be.
Okay, Ronald is here. Ronald, how are you? Hey, Ronald.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for hanging in there with us.
Yeah. Great program, as usual.
Yeah. Ronald, can you turn down your radio for us?
Hold on a second. Great radio. Hello?
Hey, there you are. Okay. So you like the show. Tell us about your relationship with fear.
Well, you know, I kind of once read a neuroscientist, a Nobel Prize winner. He has this book, Second Nature, and I remember Michio Kaku asked him, where does consciousness come from? And he flatly said, fear. Now, you know, I'm 77 years old, and I have an illness that came down on me, but, you know, not to take up your time.
No, please,
long.
Please.
The idea is that in this day and age, to a great degree, it seems to me, though I think it's always been, the greatest fear for the species man is not to be a viable part of society. Of course, alone, from the beginning of time, when he came down from the trees, alone, he's dead in the water. And he knew that as soon as that tiger came rushing out of the grass when he hit the ground. You understand where I'm coming from,
I am
right?
Understanding where you're coming from, Ronald.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And any anxiety, any embarrassment that makes you look less than, you immediately turn all red and this and that because it infringes your merit to be part of society. It's like we're hardwired,
yeah. You
know. But even before that, you know, like anxiety is what causes your legs to be strong.
So Ronald...
I mean, fear. You develop strong legs to live. We have muscularity, and it is driven by the initial confrontation when we appeared and confronted life in the long ago past. I don't mean us.
Ronald,
I mean all life.
We're going to take a comment off the air. We appreciate the call.
Okay,
it sounds like you have a really, really nice perspective on handling fear. What do you have to say about that, Will?
Yeah, so it's this idea that you're alone. It comes back to that. If you're going to be embarrassed and sort of like singled out, that's a problem. That's a huge problem.
I think he makes a great point. I mean, social stigma, shame, these are huge fears. Not fitting in, these are some of our earliest fears as kids in school. We want to fit in. We want to be kind of recognized as, you know,
Let me ask you guys something. So let's say somebody's on social media, like Facebook, and they're getting likes. Mm-hmm. Is that because they want the likes, or they're afraid not to be liked? Or both? Or both? What if somebody posts something and they're never liked? It's sort of like you're putting a communication out there. And what if somebody doesn't communicate back? Like in tennis, you're tossing the ball. Are they going to bring it back to you? You're hugging. Are they going to hug you back? And that, I think, is something that will drive people to keep on wanting to, you know, put themselves out there.
I think the likes, unlikes, or whatever it is really about attention seeking. I mean, I don't know if you're not getting liked on media. You know, some people might just say, well, I'm just not being seen. You know, are they taking it personally? I don't know. I don't have enough experience with that.
I guess we'd have to ask people.
Yeah.
We'd have to ask people
about
that.
That'll be on another show. We have another caller on the line,
Yeah,
Ben?
We might have time for one or two more calls. We have Kay on the line. Hello, Kay.
Hello.
Hi, Kay.
Hi, Kay.
Hi. I have a very similar problem to what you're talking about today.
Sure.
And I'm very anxious and have had panic attacks. Been going on for a long time, and then it stops. I have a daughter who was difficult as a child, and I believe I was a good mother, but of course I made mistakes. And she chooses to distance herself from me whenever she's angry. She always slammed doors, and so I'm going through this now. I'm too old to be taking this. I have fears about myself. And
does your daughter fear you?
She might. I don't know.
Because, I mean, you know, fear can be contagious. What do you think about that, Will?
I believe it. Yeah. I do believe it.
And so if she's feeling your fear, she might be afraid to get some of that herself. And the best strategy is obviously distancing. Do you ever tell her about your anxiety, your panic attacks? I mean, panic attacks are one of the worst things to endure as a human being. Do you have somebody that you share that with?
Yes, you do.
Tell me about that.
Well, I have a couple of friends that I share it with. I share it with my son. He doesn't want to be involved in the whole thing, so he can only do so much, and I appreciate that.
Okay.
But my daughter and I were getting very close, and we had a long talk, and she had an unresolved problem.
Okay.
And so we spoke about that, and she didn't want to bury it under the rug.
Mm.
She is the type of person.
So are you afraid to lose your daughter?
Yeah, that's it.
That's the one. And so we're going to say this on the air. Kay is afraid to lose her daughter. I mean, that's a big fear parents have about their kids. Kay, I don't want to minimize this. I just want to say, this is a real, real fear, and you need somebody to share this with. You need somebody, your girlfriends or whoever, because it's not to be taken lightly. It's a very serious fear. How you handle it, you can't control your daughter. You cannot.
No, I know.
You cannot tell her how to feel towards you. But it's important that you recognize that you have this fear of your own. So when you're talking about her, you're really missing the opportunity to talk about yourself. And I think that'll bring you closer to her or her back to you than whatever's going on right now. So I want to thank you for calling.
I just had a question. So, Kay, do you have a chance to do anything else with your daughter besides focus on the fears?
No, she's out of town. She's out of town, and I don't speak to her very often. Once a week. but we were getting very close. We can only be so close. And we were doing very well, and she was feeling safe enough to ask me what had happened. It was like 25 years ago something had happened, and she's still holding it. And and I tried to assure her that I told her as an adult, she likes to know what happened. I said, you were a difficult child. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
That's tough. Does she get to say you were a difficult mom?
No.
So what strikes me is that you get a week to renegotiate. I mean, you get a week because you're only talking once a week. You get a chance to recover each week as to how you might approach this next week. For instance, how do you want to engage with her next week when the phone call comes through?
Well, it's not going to come through because she doesn't call me. She refused to hear. I called to apologize to her when I realized that she was, that I hurt her with what I said. But she wanted to know details. She wanted to know truth.
Yeah.
She feels very strong and outwardly. And I realize that she was not, she may not be as strong as she appears. And so I apologize. And it was 3 weeks ago. And this morning I sent her a message saying that again, and asking her if she was still interested in helping me with something.
So you are still following up with her. Okay, I think you're doing all the things that you can do, and I would encourage you to keep on doing them. Encourage you to try and find some way, when you do reengage, to let the past be the past.
I have nothing to forgive her for.
Yeah, so she might have things to forgive you for, but you can't control that. The only thing you can do is let go of the past and maybe have some kind of strategy about having her in your life in the future, because it is scaring you. So we're going to take the next call, but we appreciate
thank you so much.
We appreciate your call, okay?
Thank you. Bye.
Well, you wanted to say something? Yeah,
it's
a heartbreak. I mean,
I think there's a lot to this story, and we're just getting the tip of the iceberg.
Sure.
And I think some people who call in may want to just be aware that if they talk to a therapist, that they'll get more help than just a few minutes on the phone.
Yeah, and ideally when she visits. I mean, you know, mothers and daughters going to therapy, going to a professional, someone who's on neutral ground who can just simply say, this is what I see.
Right.
You're talking a lot about the past. Let's talk about the future.
Right. And then also there's relationship dynamics, who's calling, you know, the other, and who's receiving the call.
And there's scorecarding. You know, people are keeping scorecards. I called you 3 times last week. We have Lee on the phone, another caller. Hi, Lee. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right. How are you?
Okay. So tell us about fear.
How
frightened are you today on a scale of 1 to 10?
1 to 10 is very high. Very high.
Tell me about it. Go ahead.
I'll tell you why. First of all, I just want to emphasize, I do not fear death.
Okay.
That's aside.
Okay, good for you.
What I fear is what the situation is politically today.
Okay.
And I speak Spanish. I am not Spanish. Far from it, but I learned it.
Wow,
I learned Spanish. I speak it fluently.
Yeah.
I fear of my neighborhood walking around speaking Spanish because I know... And it's the fact that there are these immigration agents around planning, they're sizing up the people here,
and
they're planning a big roundup here.
So, Lee, I want you to change that, okay? So it sounds like are you compassionate for people that are under threat?
Oh, yes, I definitely am, yeah. That I am also, yeah.
Because to me, I mean, if there was no threat, they can speak the Spanish in your neighborhood. And they're not under any threat. Would the fear go away?
This particular fear definitely would.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. No doubt about it.
That's, yeah. And so.
But the compassion would not. I think that's the point you're trying to get at, Kevin.
I think the compassion, he sounds like a compassionate man in general. For a man to be, to have this fear for other people and concern, that strikes me as somebody who's able to get outside of themselves.
Right. He's so connected that he feels himself that he could get, it sounds like, right? Is that another... Is that the issue also, that you feel like you may be picked up and rounded up?
Ah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, sure.
Simply because you speak Spanish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I know from definite proof that it would happen.
Yeah.
What I've seen already, what I've seen and heard.
Yeah. Yeah, well, listen, do you have somebody around that you can share this with? Because this sounds like it's really very high for you. I mean,
I'm going to have to seek a professional person.
Yeah,
I know one.
Yeah,
and I'm going to speak to her. I'll make an appointment to see her. But I appreciate your show, though. You've opened it up for me a lot.
Thanks, Lee. Keep calling us.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much
for the call. Thanks.
Have a good
day. Thank you.
All
you
right.
too.
Bye bye. Yeah, so it can be compassion and then tangentially something about himself.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if somebody's compassionate enough, you feel a connection to that person so strongly that that person is you also.
Yes, right. And so finally, let's close out with absorption. I mean, we absorb fear, don't we?
We can. We can absorb anything.
Yeah.
But fear, because it's so powerful, for sure.
I mean, if you're already wired for fear, if you're already anxious and somebody around you is afraid.
Yeah.
If your whole community is under siege.
Right.
Yeah. And you're picking that up on a daily basis.
But also, it's what somebody's propensity is. You know, there's this idea a wise man once told me. You know, I want somebody to feel my pain. I interpret that to mean is I want them to understand me. I want them to accept me and love me. I want to feel loved.
Yes.
And it's when somebody, let's say somebody's close to depression,
mm-hmm.
and then they see somebody else who's sad or
mm-hmm.
a sad movie,
mm-hmm.
then they'll cry.
Yeah.
If somebody tends towards happiness and they see somebody else who's happy, they're going to engage in the happiness also.
Yes.
It's they are able to connect to the person based on where they're coming from. Doesn't mean they're a bad person if they're sad and somebody's happy and they can't
sure.
feel the other one's happiness.
Right.
All I'm trying to say here is if this person is concerned and he's scared about others, chances are he's generally scared and it's too much. I just wanted to say something very quickly. Fear is not only a bad thing. It's simply a motivator we should be aware of. Fear can be a positive thing as well. If somebody is afraid of death, but that fear motivates them to see the doctor and get help and
live a fuller life.
Right. If our ancestors didn't have, a good healthy fear of saber-toothed tigers, then we wouldn't be here today. So
exactly.
There's a balance, of course. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue, our guest today, Dr. Will Winter. Thanks for being here with us. We're going to have you back.
And
have some further conversations.
They can reach you at willwintermd.com, or you can reach him here at the center at 212-757-4488.
And you can always reach us at positivemind@wbai.org with your questions, comments, suggestions, feedback on the show. We love to hear from you. We try to get back to you as soon as we can. Again, I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue. We're here every Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. only on 99.5 FM WBAI. See you next time.